So we are holding on plus Vav on the days. Vav on the days. Eight lines from the bottom. Okay. So we mentioned in the Mishnah. We So we mentioned in the Mishnah that we have eight lines from the bottom. We mentioned in the Mishnah, we talked about that you have a shulia, you have an amniotic sac that can come out of the mother. We said even if you don't find a baby with it, we assume that the house where this took place is terminated because there must have been a baby in there, ain shulia b'lo vlad. We have Reb Shimon saying that not, as we're going to discuss his opinion soon.
The shulia and the bag is the same thing.
The shulia is the bag, and then, yeah, it also includes the placenta. So we started discussing the question, what happens if you have, let's say you have a baby and you have a shulia, but is there a possibility maybe that the shulia actually belongs to a different baby? And therefore that you'd have the usual suffix. Now, if the one baby has born alive, or not alive, as the case may be, it was a male, the other one might have belonged to a female baby, or vice versa, and then you have the usual suffix of how many days of tuma and how many days of dam toya does she have. It's possible, like this, in certain cases. So, for example, we started saying that Rabbi Yehuda had brought in the name of Rab, that only if the shulia comes out within 3 days after the baby do we assume it's from the same baby. Otherwise, it's not going to delay that long, and therefore the likelihood is that it comes from a different baby. Then we discussed the question, can we maybe attribute it to the baby only if the other baby was born alive or not? Or would we say, according to Rashi's understanding of the Gemara, it's not so much if the baby is alive or not, but it has to be dabar shel kayama. It has to be that the baby was fully formed and could have been alive, even if it was in practice. It was born stillborn, but just the fact that it was fully formed means that the shulia can be attributed to it. Okay. So more on that topic. What happens if a woman miscarries a baby that looks like a raven? We talked about earlier in the paragraph about deformed babies that could look, for example, like birds. So in this case, the baby itself came out deformed, looking like a raven. The shulia, and there was also a shulia, an amniotic sac. Mahu, what would we say? Would we say that we assume that amniotic sac, that shulia belongs to this deformed baby, and then you would have the machloikas of Rameir and the Chachamim that we had earlier in the paragraph, whether she's tomei for the birth or not? Or would we say that not? Or would we say that maybe the shulia belongs to a different baby, and therefore she'd have a suffix, or therefore she might be a yeledis?
The shulia does not come out with the baby.
Usually what happens is the baby tears through it in the course of coming out of the womb, and then it comes out shortly after the baby. Right. Okay. So Rebbe answers, ain't terlin elav dabar sheyesh b'mino shulia. You can only attribute a shulia to something, to a baby that's formed in a shape of the kind of species that would have a shulia. Like this, the baby is misshapen and looks like a raven. Ravens are birds. They don't have shulias because, like most birds, they lay eggs. So therefore, we can't assume the shulia comes from that deformed baby. We have to assume it came from another baby. You don't find the other baby. It means that it was dissolved in the womb or whatever, but still the mother is tummy from the birth.
Now, this shulia comes out, and the baby comes. She comes out 3 years after. It's coming out of her.
It's coming out of her, yeah.
The
point is it comes out of her womb. Together with the baby in the womb, you have the shulia surrounding it and protecting it. That's what the fluid that surrounds the baby is inside. Right.
It comes out 3 days afterwards, well, it's finally around. She's nobody.
That's the point. Okay, fine. But the point still remains that when we say shulia babayis abayis tome, we mean when there was no baby found. A shulia came out without a baby. Because ain shulia blood blood, it means there must have been a baby, but it got reabsorbed or whatever. But yeah. In any case,
it came out of her.
Yeah, I understand. No, that's neither here nor there. Of course you know about it. So what? I'm not seeing nothing relevant.
No, what I'm saying is that it was found in the house.
No. What do we mean? Show your bye-bye. It means that she gave birth in the house. Right. Yeah. Fine. Hey, okay. What about Shuraboy Mabu? What about Rabbi Yossi Ben Shol says, what about if the shulia actually is attached to this deformed baby that looks like a raven? In other words, normally the shulia is connected to the baby by the umbilical cord. So Rebbe says, you're asking something impossible. It's impossible that a baby that's so deformed and looks like a bird should have a shulia ever attached to it, because it doesn't. It wouldn't have developed with a shulia in the first place. How? Because that's what he said. It's only double shivamino. Only the kind. Only if it looks like an animal, for example, animals have shilyas, but birds don't, because birds are laid an egg.
Since there was a shilya,
so if the shilya is not attached to it, we assume the shilya came from another baby, and if the shilya is attached to it, we say it's impossible, so there's no sense asking about it.
Let's say that is
came from
the baby.
It means that it came from a different baby. No, it means, in other words, he's saying if it's attached, there's no such thing. Rebbe says it's impossible that a woman should miscarry a dmus orev, a creature that looks like a bird that has a shulya attached. Hey, the Gemara says, though, Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul asks Rebbe on the basis of a braisa, hamapelas min behema chayva oif, a woman miscarries something that looks like a domestic or wild animal or a bird, the shulya iman, and along with it comes a shulya. So, this man shall shulya kshura iman, if the shulya is actually attached to the baby, ain choshen levlad acher, then we don't have to worry about that there was another baby. The shulya obviously belongs to this baby. Therefore, whatever the din would be with this baby, it's a braisa, yeah. So one second, that's what, hold on. So again, according to the mayor earlier in the parak, we would say therefore she is tummy from the birth, because the baby itself, even though it looks like behema chaya or oif, is considered a regular baby to the extent that she has too much later. So the shulya doesn't change it. The shulya doesn't change anything. This is the fact that there's a shulya doesn't change it. According to the chachamim, who said over there that the behema chaya or oif is not considered a baby, so fine, if the shulya is attached to it, it's still not a baby. It's still not. Who said anything about Reb Shimon? Reb Shimon we're going to talk about later on. Again, you have to remember, our Mishnah was saying Shulya Babayis Habayis Tomei because we're talking about there was no baby accompanying the Shulya, at least no visible baby accompanying the Shulya. So here we're talking about there is something visible accompanying. So it's a separate case. Ein Shulya Kshurim, continues the Braisa, if the Shulya is not attached to this deformed baby that looks like a behema chayor, choshen levladacha, then we do have to be concerned that there may have been another baby, which we don't find because it was dissolved or reabsorbed or whatever. Therefore, hareini matal alein chomesh shnei vladeis. Therefore, we have to have the chumrah of two possible babies. Because, in other words, if the behema chayav oif was a male, then the shulya might have belonged to a female twin that was with it, and vice versa. Rashi points out that according to the mayor, according to the chachamim, again, you wouldn't say that the chumrah would be that because it had there been just the behema chayav oif, because that's not going to help. There's still going to be noise in there. Also. They seem to have quieted down a little bit. Okay, so again, according to the mayor, we would say that you have, for example, the behema chayav oif is a zacher, so therefore the shilya may have come from an akeva, or vice versa. Therefore, you have the chumrah of two vladers. If we say, according to the chachamim, then what it would mean in the chumrah would be, had it just been a behema chayav oif, then there's no vlad, but because there's a shilya that's not attached to it, therefore there may have been another vlad, and therefore you have the chumrah of that she's tomei misafik because of the later. Tosfos discusses a little bit the ins and outs of it, whether this braisa is like the mayor or like the chachamim. One thing in the course of the whole discussion, Tosfos points out an interesting thing. You can have a case where you have a sex faker, but the two sfeikas contradict each other. And Tosfos says, then you can't treat it as a sex faker. So that's an interesting point that Tosfos brings up over here as a side issue related to our Gemara, which a number of Rishonim and Achronim deal with that issue among the rules of sfeik faker. Do we in fact say, like what Tosfos is saying over here, that if the two sfeikas contradict each other, then you can't apply the rules of sfeik faker and be made? Okay, anyway. The point is, Shani Omer, we have to say, Shemani Moyach Shvir Shol Shulya, Vini Moyach Shulya Shol Shvir. What happens, again, if you have the Behema Chayeva Oif not attached to the Shulya, then you have that maybe the Shvir, maybe the partially formed baby that was attached to the Shulya has gotten dissolved, and maybe the Shulya that was attached to this deformed baby has also dissolved, and therefore, so you actually had two babies there to begin with, and therefore you have the chumrah of two babies. Okay, the point is that because the Shulya is not attached, we can't necessarily assume it came from the baby. The point is kyuvta. So therefore, that's a clear contradiction against Rebbe. Now, true, if it was just a matter of a braisa, fine. Rebbe is a tana. He can argue with a braisa. But it's not just that we have a contradiction with the braisa. It's that Rebbe was saying it's impossible for there to be a baby that looks like a bird and have a shuya attached, and we see from the braisa that it could. So that's a clear contradiction against Rebbe. So you see that it could happen, right? Right. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rabbi. So that's it. So Rebbe is contradicted. So obviously such a thing could happen. And therefore, so that's what the Braisa is saying. If the Shulia is attached, then you have one din. If the Shulia is not attached, then you have a different din.
Is the Braisa stronger than
Elch? The Braisa is telling us a fact that there can be. Rebbe is saying the fact that there can't be. But now we've proved that that's incorrect. There could be such a thing. So therefore, Rebbe should not have told Rebbe Yossi ben Shaul it's impossible. Dover Shaina Shaul. Dover Shaina Shaul. So that's the Tiyota. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Bar Shila Omer Rav Masna Omer Shmuel. Maisa, the tolerance of Shulia Bevlad ad Asara Yom. It once happened that they attributed a Shulia to a baby when it came out 10 days later. So before we said 3 days, but we said maybe that's only if the baby is dead or deformed or whatever. Now we're saying that when the baby, now we're past this, we're talking about when the baby is alive. And 10 days later, the Shulia came out. So we can assume that the Shulia belongs to this baby. However, this whole concept of toilin only applies if the shulia comes after the baby. Because again, the normal thing is the baby tears through the shulia and comes out, and then the shulia comes out after the baby. But if the shulia comes out ahead of the baby, that's not a normal thing. So therefore, there's a real possibility that the shulia actually belongs to another baby that got reabsorbed. Okay. Amr Rav Babachana Amr Rav Yechon. And Mice of the Tolerus of Shulia Bevlad.
10 days later, we don't say that maybe with a second baby we have to count now.
That's the point. So therefore we do say, no, so that's the point. If it came out after the baby, even 10 days later, we can say that it is from the same baby. It just took its time coming out. And therefore she doesn't have to count separate Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara. We can assume it's all from the same baby. But even 10 days later. And more on that, Amr Rav Babachana Amr Rav Yechon. Mice of the Tolerus of Shulia Bevlad. Ad Chof Gimel Yom. It happened one time that they attributed the Shulia to the Vlad much more than 10 days later. It was 23 days later, and they still said the Shulia can be assumed to come from the baby. Because before we had Rav Yehuda saying in the name of Rav 3 days. We have different opinions. These are different Amaroim. They're allowed to argue with each other. Omele Rav Yosef Adchav Dalad Amrit one. So Rav Yosef says to Rav Baba Chana, actually you told us 24. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, it's not that what is it, 23 or 24? Either it's not counting the day of the day that the baby itself came out. So the baby, let's say, came out on the Chodesh. This came out 23 days later, meaning on the 24th of the month. So altogether, from the birth through the end of the Shulia, you're 24 days. Another way of looking at it related to that is you're talking... How many, half days, like if it came out in the middle of the day, and then 23 days later, you have 23 days later, also in the middle of the day, the Shulia came out, but altogether, if you count the complete number of calendar days, you have 24 days. Omer of Acha Breder of Avira, Omer of Yitzchak, more on this, Maisev and Ishtah have Lad Acha Chaveh Lamed Gimel Yoyim. It happened once that one baby was born delayed after its twin, 33 days. He had two babies in the womb, and one of them was born, and the other one was born 33 days later. And again, Omele Rav Yosef, Lama Dalad Amrithlan, again, Rav Yosef says to Rav Acha, you actually told us 34, same thing, and it's not a machloekas, it's just depends how you count the days. Okay. So the question is, how does that work? Two different days. One is we're saying a baby came out and later a shulia came out. We're saying we assume the shulia belongs to that baby, even though it's 23 days later. We're saying another din that you had two babies came out and one of them was 33 days later than the other.
When he came out,
there may have been a shulia, there may have not. Not always is there a visible shulia. Usually there is, but not, yeah. Sometimes it depends. Sometimes you have twins that are within one sack. Sometimes you have two separate ones. So the question is, I can understand this that we're saying that two twins could come out as much as 33 days apart. That works according to the opinion, which we're going to discuss in more detail in the next parak, that when a woman gives birth in the 9th month, which is most women are pregnant for 9 months, it doesn't have to be at the end of 9 months. It could be a partial. It could be that she 8 complete months and a little bit into the 9th month. So if that's the case, mashkacha flaw, so then you can have a case, mekutoyin means cut off. So in other words, she became pregnant, let's say, Rosh Hashanah. So if we said any legislam kutoyin would mean that under normal circumstances, the earliest that baby is going to be born is the end of Sivan, not, or the beginning of Tammuz, whatever, 9 full months. But another way of looking at it is it could be lemkutoyin. You could have part of a month and part of a month at the beginning, part of a month at the end. Yeah, and then it would still be considered a 9-month baby. So then mashkacha flaw. So then it's possible to find that you can have 33 days apart because echad nigmar tzirotz l'saif shiva ve'echad nigmar tzirotz l'tchilas tisha. Suppose you had two twins in the womb. One of them was developing on the 7th month, on the 7-month track, which we learned before that babies can develop on a 7-month track or a 9-month track. And then what happens is, so one of them is born at the end of 7 months, the echad nigmar tzirotz l'tchilas tisha, the other one is completed at the beginning of the 9th month, so 33 days, fine. So you have a couple of days less than the end of the 7th month, then you have the entire 8th month, and then you have a day or two into the 9th month, and then the second one is born. So that makes sense. But according to the opinion that when a woman gives birth after a 9-month pregnancy, it's always full 9 months. Then what are you going to say? How do you have a case of 33 days apart? We know throughout Shas that if a baby is born in the 8th month of pregnancy, it's not going to survive. So the only way would be that one of them was born at the end of the 7th month, and the other one is born at the end of the 9th month, but that's more than 33 days apart. Tosfos points out actually that there is a Gemara elsewhere that talks about the possibility that maybe a baby stays in the womb longer than usual, so that you could have, for example, a 7-month baby that's late and therefore it comes out in the 8th month. Tosfos says though apparently not all the Amoraim agree with that concept. So then okay, so you can have a 7-month baby that ends up being delayed and winds up coming. Well, in other words, like he said, you have babies that develop on a 7-month track, and they're born after 7 months, or in the 7th month or whatever, and they're perfectly normal and full and fully developed and healthy. We talked about it the other day. You have a number of famous figures in Jewish history are like that. Moshe Rabbeinu was born after a pregnancy of 6 months and a couple of days. Shmuel Anavi, there's a machlokes whether Yitzchak was or not. Yeah. Peres and Zerach also. So yeah, okay. Anyway. Yeah, okay, that happens. Anyway. So then how do you have that certain babies can be 33 days apart? The answer is Epoch Schmeitzer. Look around the figures. Before we said that you had 23 days later for a Shoya and 33 days later for a twin. Now let's say the other way around. Up to 33 days, the Shoya can be delayed after the baby by as much as 33 days. Chaf Gimel Levlad, and only 23 for the baby. So therefore, again, that you have one, so let's say both twins are developing on a 7-month track. Everybody agrees that a baby that's born in the 7th month could be born early in the 7th month or at the end of the 7th month. So there you can have, then they can be up to 23 days apart.
So, this says it's going to be up to 28?
No, what?
What did you say?
We said that if a baby is born in the 8th month, then it's considered not viable throughout Shas. Nowadays it's different. But here we're talking about the 7 months, because a baby born in the 7th month can be viable if it was developing on the faster track, on the 7-month track. What the logic is, I don't know, but actually there's an interesting medrash someplace where there's an interesting medrash where some goyim asked, some Greek-speaking goyim asked Rav Abahu, where on earth do you get that idea from? And he pointed out to them that actually you have a hint to it in the Greek alphabet, and the Greek alphabet and the numbers of it, that the seventh and eighth letters of their alphabet are respectively Zeta and Eta, and those are related to words respectively that mean life and death. So therefore, like he says to them, no, it's not the point that we go by goyim. We go by what the Torah says. He tells them, you see a hint here in your own alphabet. Where's the Torah say? All over Shas, in the Sefer Shabbos and over here and in Yevamos. What the logic is, I don't know. but Bazoyas. That's the two different ways that a baby can develop on a 7-month track, a baby can develop on a 9-month track, and that's it, the 8th month of that. Okay. Fine.
So there's never any baby born on an
8-month. No, so again, nowadays is different. Nowadays is different. No, because nowadays, for one thing, they have incubators. Babies can be born even earlier than that. If a baby is born in the 8th month and it's premature, they can put it in an incubator and it will survive. It's not that babies couldn't be born in the 8th month, but in halacha, we assume that if a baby is born in the 8th month, it is not viable. It's not going to live by, it's not going to live for more than 30 days. And the 7th month is, yes, that's a commonplace thing for our child.
Okay.
Whatever it is, them the facts throughout chat that we assume a 7-month baby is viable, 8 is not, 9 is. Okay. So that's how we could have. We could have then that two babies are born both in the 7th month, one at the beginning of it, one at the end of it, and they're as much as 23 days apart. Okay. Almond of oven bar.
The end of the 7 months is almost 8 months.
Almost, but not quite. We're going to say that if the baby develops on the faster track, then it will be born during the 7th month. Again, Tosius brings a different Gemara.
You said 7 months. Okay, the end of 7 months is 8 months. So
a baby can be born during the 7th month and be viable. Any time during the 7th month, the beginning of it or the end of it. If it is born during the 8th month, and the Gemara points out elsewhere, if it's obviously not fully developed, it doesn't have fully formed hair and nails, then it means that it was a premature 9-month baby, and then it is non-viable. Yeah, that's what the Gemara says in various places. Okay. Omen of Oven Bar Adam.
Do you believe that this is a fact today?
No, I don't, because nowadays Nishtanu Ativim, and we have different medical procedures that can be done, such as incubators.
You
said the
child was born 4 months.
Right. Armor of Oven by Adam. They have just barely, but whatever. Five months, whatever. The point is they didn't have that in those days. Armor of Oven by Adam, Armor of Nachem, Ishkra Sharim, Ramila Beis Sharim, Maisib Nishtaha Vlad Echad Achachaveri Gimel Chadoshim. It actually happened that one time there were two babies in a room, and one of them was born 3 months after the other one. You want to know who those boys are? They're sitting right in front of us in the Beis Medrash. Who are they? Yehuda and Chizkiya, Bnei Reb Chiya. They are the twin sons of Reb Chizkiya. They were born 3 months apart. Yehuda and Chizkiya. So that's the question. We say in a braisa that a woman cannot become pregnant after she's already pregnant. So how is it possible? The Gemara is assuming that they came from two different conceptions, that they're not actually twins, that Reb Chiya had relations with her one time and then another time a couple of months later, and therefore you have two different babies, but that's impossible. Now you actually have, we talked about briefly the other day, Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Is it that if that were to happen, is it that it could happen that she could become pregnant the second time? That's how Rashi learns. However, in that case, both of them are not going to survive. One of them is going to end up getting crushed and becoming a sandal, which we learned about the other day. In that case, the hero obviously wasn't, because they both came out alive. According to Tosfos, once a woman is pregnant, she can't become pregnant, period, even such that it'll form a sandal. So Tosfos learns those Gemaras differently. Tosfos learns that if a woman, let's say, is already carrying twins, then there's the possibility that maybe if she and her husband have relations again, that one of those twins might get crushed. In any case, though, over here, how do you have two babies that are 3 months apart? Says, because what it is it was one drop, one fertilized egg, and it's chalkalashtayim, it divided into two, meaning that you have, it's identical twins. However, they weren't identical as far as what track they developed on. Echad nigmer tzorotim chilazayim, ve'echad b'seif tes, one of them was completed and ready to be born at the beginning of 7 months, and the other one was not completed and ready to be born until the end of the 9th month. So that's almost 3 months apart. Now, we learned yesterday, by the way, we said that Rav had said that a baby doesn't delay that when you have twins in the womb. One of them doesn't delay that long after the other one. So what do you have over here? We have to see that they were 3 months apart. So the Ramban brings from some people who wanted to explain that maybe Rav didn't know about the situation with Yehuda and Chizkiya. The Ramban still can't be. For one thing, Yehuda and Chizkiya are his own cousins. Rav Chiya is his uncle, so Yehuda and Chizkiya are his own cousins. He would for sure know what was going on when they were born. So you have a couple of possibilities. Tosfos on the previous almost says that Rav would agree it could happen, but it's so rare that there's no reason to consider it as a possibility in halacha. If it happens, but we're not going to consider it normally as a possibility. That therefore, if you have a shulia coming out a few days later, you might assume that it came from a different baby. A different answer that Ramban says is when Rav says they don't come out too long one after the other, he's talking about when they both develop on the same track. But here, where they develop on different tracks, as the Gemara says, then yes, they could very well be very far off. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, Shulya b'bayis habayis tameh. We said if there's a Shulya in a house, and there was a woman gave birth in a house, again, the Shulya came out, no baby apparently. So we're not talking about, to answer what you were saying before, we don't mean that we found the shulia in a house. We mean that the woman actually gave birth and miscarried the shulia in the house. Habayis tameh, we said the house is tameh, because of the baby that obviously came along with the shulia, because ain't shulia below blood. If the baby is born normally and is alive, then the house is not tummy. We're talking about because there's a dead baby. Because there's no, you don't find any baby, so therefore there obviously had to have been a baby with it, but it got dissolved. We learn in a bright. If there's a shulia in a house, then the house is tummy. Loy sha shulia vlad. Now it's not because the shulia itself is a baby and would be matame. Ella shein shulia, shein vladima. But the reason is because there's no shulia that doesn't have a baby with it. Divrei Rav Meir. That's what Rav Meir says, and therefore obviously there was a baby and it got dissolved, but nevertheless it's still matame. As the Gemara is going to discuss soon. Yeah. Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon matame. Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Shimon all say that no, the house is tummy. Amru loy l'Rav Meir, so they said to Rav Meir, these three Tanoim said to Rav Meir, how can you say the house is Tomei because of the Shulia? Wouldn't you have to agree, that suppose you were to take the Shulia and everything that came out with it, suppose you were to take it and put it in a cup and put it in a basin, whatever, a seifel is a basin, and take it out into another room in the house, into the outer room of the house, shehu tahor, that outer room will be tahor. You won't say that it's tomei ba'oihel from the dead baby. No, in other words, so let's say she gave birth in an inner room. And let's say bayis achel literally means a separate house. So it's a bayis chitzon. But let's say, yeah, she gave birth in one house, and then let's say they took the shulia and everything else that came out with it and put it in a basin and carried it into another house. So they say to the mayor, don't you agree the second house is tahor? On the lahan aval. So he says to them, yes, indeed. So they say v'lama. So then why are you saying the second house is tahor? So he says, l'fisha enoi. Because at that point, the baby doesn't exist anymore. So once they carried it around, then it dissolves. So they said in that case, if you say that once it dissolved, it's not matame anymore. Well, in that case, in the original house also, how does it come that there's no baby together with the shulia? Because it dissolved. Well, it's dissolved. You're agreeing that once it dissolved, then it's not matame the house. So why is it matame the first house where she gave birth? Amalahan, so the mayor answers them, because there's a big difference between whether it was dissolved one time versus two times. In other words, he says to them, it's one thing when it dissolves inside the womb, and therefore we see a shulia came out, and you don't see a baby with it. Fine, it's dissolved, but not so completely dissolved that it shouldn't still be considered that there's a mess there that would be matamah. As the Gemara is going to be developing the idea over here, when you have a mess, even if it's dissolving, or we're going to talk about later on burnt or whatever, nevertheless, as long as the basic shape of it still exists, as long as there's something recognizable over there that was a body, then it's still matamah. So therefore, he says, when that happens after the birth, it's still only nimuk hamachas. It's not so completely dissolved and then mixed up and whatever that it shouldn't be matame. As opposed to once they put it into the basin and took it into another house, now you have two nimuk. Number one, where it got dissolved before it was born, or while it was being born, whatever. And number two, that it gets mixed up while you're carrying it around in the basin. So that, I agree, it's not going to be matame the other house.
One of those take 5 minutes.
Doesn't matter. The point is, it could even take 1 minute, but the point is just the carrying it in the basin of necessity. The liquid over there moves around and whatever, and therefore, yeah. Okay. So, whereas they don't hold that distinction, and therefore they say that the first house is Tahara. Okay. Rav Papa one time was sitting behind Rav Bibi. So Rav Bibi was one of the senior Talmidim, and Rav Papa at that point is one of the junior Talmidim. The rule was in those days the higher level Talmidim sat closer to the front. Kamei de Rav Amnona, they're sitting in front of Rav Amnona, who was the Rebbe, the Yosef v'Ka'amar, and Rav Papa was sitting and saying as follows, my time of the Rav Shimon, what, why indeed does Rav Shimon say that the house is not Tomei? Because, okay, so you have this business about that it's dissolved, but why should we say, so what if it's dissolved? You still have the entire goof of the mess over here. So the same way Rashi points out, we're going to learn in the continuation of the Sugya, we're going to talk about the concept of Rokov, where you have that a body, a corpse, decays and becomes dust, where we say that that dust is also able to be metamed. It's also able to be metamed by oil. So therefore, and the point is that there you have, so you have like you have the entire goof of the mess over there. So the same way over here, you have the entire substance that made up the goof of this baby. So why shouldn't the house be coming?
Human ashes,
we're going to talk about at the bottom of the next Amud. We're going to talk about when they're metamed, when not. There it's a little less simple, but wait, we'll talk about it. But Okay, Tosfos has a long discussion over here. Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying a little bit differently, that we're not necessarily talking about the whole goof, we're talking about a kazayas. And so Tosfos asks, but wait a minute, once part of it is bottled, then you don't have a kazayas. So Tosfos explains more clearly that we're talking about the tumor that you have from an entire goof, meaning even this baby was a very small baby. It was premature. After it was born way, way premature. And that's why all you see is a shuya. You don't even see the baby. Because it got dissolved. So the whole thing may not even amount to a kazayas. But nevertheless, because you have the whole goof over there, therefore it's still metamed. Well, no, in other words, the point is, let's say, for example, it hadn't dissolved. Let's say she miscarried a shulya, and there was clearly a shear attached to it, like we had the other day. There's no question everybody would agree the house is something. So now, all we're talking about is where you find the shulya, but you don't find the shear because it seems to have dissolved. So Rav Meir is saying the house is still Tomei, and Rav Shimon, and then the other Chachamim with him, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi, are saying that it's not. But the point is, in other words, that you have there is the entire substance of the body of this baby over there. It's just dissolved. So why should Rav Shimon say that the house is not Tomei? There is, because there's still all the substance of it. So who cares that we don't? Who cares that we? The fact that you have a goof shalom, the fact that you have the substance of a complete goof over here. So why should this? So why not? The reason is, Reb Papa says kasover kol tumah shenis arabam min acher, because Reb Shimon holds that anything of tumah where you have something else mixed into it, batla, then it's batla. Now in this case, you have there's the blood that came out, there's the blood that came out with it, there's various other fluids that came out with the baby and whatever, and therefore so Rashi says even if we're talking the min acher itself is tumah, but as long as it's not the same type of tumah, then it's mevatla. So in this case, Reb Shimon is going to say that yes, you have the entire substance of the baby over here, it liquefied, which is why you don't see it, but it's mixed in with other stuff, therefore it's batla. So this is actually Rav Bibi who's saying that. So Rav Papa tells them, so Rav Bibi, the senior Talmud, had pointed this out, but this is the reason for Rav Shimon. So Rav Papa tells them, you should know, Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi have the same reason. They have the same reasoning as Rav Shimon. They also say that when Tumah is mixed with something else, then it's bottled. So all the Talmidim laughed at Rav Papa. Maishna, what's the difference? Pshita, isn't it obvious? Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon all have the same opinion here in the Braisa. They all say Metahalin. So, of course, once Rav Bibi gave us a reason for Rav Shimon, why should we not assume the same reason applies to Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi? Amar Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says, Afilu ki hom milta, you know what? Even when it's something like that, even...
It doesn't matter if they have different reasons. There are always things one way.
That's not the point. The point is we want to understand their reasoning. So sort of... We want to know. We want to understand their reason.
It doesn't have any
impact. Yeah, it's part of Torah, therefore it has an impact. So Rav Bibi had given us a reason. It's not a matter of practical halacha, but we still need to understand their opinion. So Rav Bibi had told us that Rav Shimon's reason is because it's batel. Rav Papa points out the same thing can be said about Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. So they're like, what's the chiddush? Obviously, if that reason applies to Rav Shimon's opinion, then it equally applies. Well, one second. Amar Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says, Afilu hachi, afilu ki hom milsa, you know what? maybe he's saying this now, maybe he's saying this years later, looking back on it, afilu ki hamil, that even that kind of thing, where a person says something and other people may make fun of him and say that you didn't say any chiddush, lema inish, a person should still be prepared to say it, v'lenishtet kamei rabbi, he shouldn't be quiet in front of his Rebbe, he should mention it, because after all, we may find out, even though it seems like such a poshita thing, we may actually realize some deeper point from it. Mishum Shanema. So therefore, in other words, Rapapa is saying, I was right for saying what I said, even though the other Talmudim laughed at me. Mishum Shanema, like the Pasuk says in Mishle, in Navalta Vihisnase, if you have embarrassed yourself, in Navalta, if you've embarrassed yourself, Vihisnase, eventually you will be raised up. You've embarrassed yourself for Divrei Torah. You've said something which other people are making fun of you, like, well, what was the point of even saying that? But Vihisnase, you're going to end up being raised up. The im zamoisa, on the other hand, if you're quiet, you're willing to take the embarrassment as long as you're saying something in Torah. The im zamoisa, but if you're quiet, yod lapeh, eventually you're going to be putting your hand to your mouth, because then eventually time will come when you're on a more advanced level of learning, and you're not going to be able to give a good answer because you were embarrassed to speak up back in the day when you were a younger Talmud. No, but that's the point. In other words, what he's saying is like this: if you learn to say your point, to explain your point when you're younger, then that way new things in Torah can be learned from it. And later on, it means, in other words, that if you don't do that, if when you're younger you're too embarrassed, let's put it that way, a person who's embarrassed and doesn't take it, is not going to be able to learn well. So Rapapa is saying, if I hadn't said anything, then maybe when I'm older and someone asks me a question in Torah, I would have to put my hand to my mouth. Like I say, I don't really know. Because I don't have that. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'azir of Shimon l'taymei. So what was your papa thinking when he said this? I mean, aside from that, we're saying that he should be willing to take the embarrassment. After all, it is your papa. There had to be something more than what he's saying than just the surface meaning.
Im
zamoisa, if you were quiet, the shasaka. Zamoisa means being quiet. Zamoisa, the shasakter, Rashi says, im zamoisa means, zamoisa literally means if you're thinking. So like if you're thinking, I don't want to get embarrassed, therefore you'd be quiet, then yeah. So the Ritva talks about that actually the next piece of Gemara over here may the next line, the Azir of Shimon L'Taimei, may be part of Rapapa's statement. That he wanted to say actually that even though on the surface you have only Reb Shimon, even though on the surface we only have Reb Shimon himself in a different context saying a related din, nevertheless Rapapa is saying that you should know that Reb Yehuda and Reb Yossi would agree to it as well. Another possibility, Daniel Yoda says that maybe Rapapa was saying it as a rhetorical question. He's asking Rabibi, you're saying this is Rab Shimon's reason. Is that actually also Rab Yehuda and Rab Yossi's reason? And then when the Talmud laughed, then Rapapa said, you thought that I'm saying it as a fact, but I'm not. I was saying it as a question. Okay, anyway. So Va'azgir Rab Shimon L'taymei. So Rab Shimon goes according to his own Svara. This that he's saying that Tuma mixed with something else becomes bottle. Titania, we learn in a Braisa. If you have a spoonful of rakov, so rakov we just talked about is this dust that a corpse molds and molders and becomes dust. Maloy tarvad is a certain size spoon. The Gemara explains, I think in Nazir that it's the size of two hands cut together. Anyway, so that amount is halach l'moshe m'sinai, that amount of rakov from a meth is metame. So if you have maloy tavad rakov, shenafal v'secha upper kolshu, a little bit of dust, of regular dust, falls into it. Tame, it's still matame. One second, but Rab Shimon matame, but Rab Shimon says it's tar. So Rab Shimon is going to his own svara. This that Rab Bibi had told us, that Rab Shimon's svara is based on the idea that one thing, that tuma can be bottle. So in the Braisa over here, we see also that Rav Shimon says it's tar. My time is Rav Shimon. So why indeed does Rav Shimon say that tumah can be bottle in the case of Rakov, and then we can apply that back also to the case of the dissolved baby. Omer Rabba, so Rabba says, or Hagoy Tabach says Rav actually, Ashkachtinu l'rabbonin d'bei Rav, I one time found the Talmidim of the Yeshiva. D'bei Rav, by the way, doesn't mean the Yeshiva of Rav necessarily. It just means the Bet Medrash. So I found the Talmudim in the Beit Medrash, the Yasu Vakamri, they were sitting and saying as follows. The reason why Rav Shimon would say that the Rakov in this case is bottle in the dust that fell into it, even though it's only a very small amount of dust. Inevitably, somewhere in the mixture, you're going to have two grains of the regular dust, which is not tameh, where you have one grain of rakov between them, and then v'chosilei, and then so then it's bottled because midaraisa one thing can be bottled in two. The whole concept that you need 60 or whatever to be mevatel something is only derabanan. Deraisa we go according to the roiv after rab lahatis. So therefore midaraisa you have two things of heter and one thing of ister, let's say, or two things of tara and one thing of truma or whatever together, then the one thing of ister or truma or whatever is bottle. So inevitably, if you have a little bit of dust, a little bit of dirt falls into this pile of rakov, someplace in the pile you're going to have a piece of dust, a piece of rakov, and another piece of dust, and then one little bit of rakov that's between them is going to be bottle, the two in one, and therefore, and now you don't have a full maloy tarvod of rakov because you started out with exactly a tarvod full. Now you have one grain of it is missing.
It took its place.
Considered as if it was bottle. Once you have one bit of it between two pieces of dust, then that piece is considered as though it wasn't there. It's considered as though it's not rakov anymore. So now you don't have the full amount of maloy tarvod rakov.
Even though it's dust is
such a small amount, right? Because right. Va'aminu. So Rava says, I told those Tamidim, Adraba, on the contrary, you should argue, on the contrary, you can very well have that someplace in the pile, you're going to have a piece of rakov, a piece of dust, and a piece of rakov, and then by the same logic, the other way around, that bit of dust is going to be bottle. And then you have an even bigger shear. Then you have another. Now, actually, it's interesting. When we say the nafish le shiura, that you have a greater shear, that would imply that if that were to work, if we were to say bittel in that way, it would mean that the dust itself, that little piece of dust that's between two pieces of rakov, would actually be considered rakov. And therefore, so you end up with more than a tarot of rakov. Now, that point actually, when we say that something of heter is bottle and something of iser, does the heter actually transform into something also itself? That is actually a machlokas. That's actually a wide ranging machlokas that you find the number of among bottle. That's the point. In other words, one way of looking at it is you can say bottle means fine. We consider it as if it wasn't there, but not to say that we should actually consider that it's transformed into iser. So when all Gemara uses the expression benafish le shiura, that you have a greater shear, that would work according to the opinion that in such a case it actually transforms and it's actually considered as though it transformed into rakov. If we don't say that, then that's what we have the gears to here in parenthesis, but not for the late shiura. So you still have the complete shiur, because none of the rakov has been bottled. So Rava is telling the Talmidim, why are you assuming that some of the rakov might be bottled by being between bits of dust? On the contrary, some of the dust might be between bits of rakov, and it'll be bottled.
Rakov is what?
Rakov is this dust from a regular body, a regular human body, a regular human corpse that decays and becomes dust. So we can't say that Reb Shimon's reason why he would say that a maloy tavod rakov that has a little dust mixed in, the reason why it's not tomei is because some of the rakov is bottle, because not necessarily, just the opposite. Some of the dust that fell in there is more likely to be bottle. Ela Omer Rabba, Hainu Taimed Reb Shimon. So rather, Rabba says the reason why Reb Shimon would say, in the case of the tavod rakov, why if a little bit of dust falls into it, that it's not tomei, because he says, the end of this rakov, in other words, this that we're saying now, after dust has fallen into it, is it still matame or not? Has to be kitchilasa, it has to be like the initial thing. How does rakov come to be matame in the first place? How does it come to form? And once we say that, if we say that that's the reason, then it has nothing to do with the dissolved baby, because then it's a special thing that applies only to rakov. Namely like this, matchilasa, what happens when rakov first begins? What happens is, in order for the rakov to be matame, it has to be pure rakov from the mess without anything else mixed into it. Nasale davar achav gan giloin. What happens is, if there's anything else to begin with, together with that body, that is going to decay also, then that other thing becomes a gan giloin and prevents it from being matame. What is gan giloin? Rashi translates as something that stands in opposition to it. Tosfos brings a different gear from the Aruch, double on niglo, it means like something that gets rolled around together with it. In other words, the point is like this. If, let's say, for example, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, let's say a normal case, you bury a mess in Tachrichim, for example. So what happens when the body starts decaying? The Tachrichim also do. Therefore, if you were to eventually open up the grave and find dust in there, some of that dust would be from the mess, some of it would be from the Tachrichim. The concept of Rakav does not apply in that case. In that case, even if you could identify these particular bits of rock come from the mess, the halacha would be they're not metal.
It's always the case. How can rock be isolated from everything else?
For one second. So but it can be, as we're going to say in a second. Hold on. One second. We're going to see in a second. So Rav Shimon would say that just like at the beginning, for Rakav to form and be Metame in the first place, it has to be that there's nothing else mixed in, it has to be pure. Otherwise, whatever else in there is Gangiloin, it prevents it from becoming. The same thing Rav Shimon would say at the end, after the Rakav has already formed, if something else, like dust, falls into it, then it also becomes a Gangiloin and it prevents it from being Metame. Okay, Maihi, what do we mean about the beginning of Rakav? What happens when Rakav first forms? Titania, we learn in a Brisa, a zehu mes sheyeshle Rakav. What is the case of a mess where the concept of Rakav applies, and therefore if you have a double handful of its Rakav, then it will be metame. The ezehu mes sheyeshle Rakav, and what's the case of a mess that does not? So like this, nikbar orum, it would have to be that the mess was buried undressed without tachrichim, but orin shall shayish in a marble coffin. Marble doesn't break down. No, it doesn't.
Marble, but it's always dust.
No, it's closed up.
We're not talking about microparticles of dust that are in the air. We're talking about the actual dust that forms from things that spoil, from things that are rotting away. So therefore, so a marble coffin is not gonna decay. Therefore, all the rock of that you find in there is gonna be from the mess. Or you have gabi risk for shalabanim. Or another possibility, let's say the mess was buried on a stone floor. Again, the stone is not gonna
decay.
Stones don't decay.
Sure, they decay. Look at the pyramids. They come close.
They haven't decayed. The coating has been taken off them or whatever. The pyramids itself. No, they wear down eventually. They don't decay. That's not the same thing.
Okay.
Because the difference is that a stone floor doesn't decay. If the pyramids still had their actual coating, then they'd still look as new as they did when they were made. Zehu mes sheyesh le'rakav. Those are okay. That's the case where the mess has rakav, and now if you have a caravan of that rakav, then it's metame. The ezehu mes she'ein le'rakav. What's the case of a mess where there's no rakav? Nikba b'ksuse, if he's buried in clothing and tachrichim, so then again the tachrichim break down, and then therefore you have dust of them mixed in. Oy ba'orin shal eis, so he's buried in a wooden coffin, so the wood decays. Oy agabi rispa shal levenim, or on top of a pavement of bricks, where bricks break down much more easily than stones do, which answers your question about the pyramids, because what's left of the pyramid mostly is bricks, not stones. What's left of the pyramid mostly is bricks. They used to have an outer coating that was made out of limestone. Anyway, so then zehu mes she'ein lo rakav. So then those mesim do not have rakav. V'loy omru rakav elo lemes bovad. Furthermore, the whole concept of rakav only applies to a mess, meaning somebody who died naturally, which the Gemara says lema'uti horug deloy, as opposed to if somebody was killed. Then they don't have rakav because the concept of rakav only applies if the body is intact. When a person is killed, then they're not intact. The blood came out of them before they died. Therefore, they're no. Therefore, the concept, even if such a person was buried unclothed in a marble coffin, etc., then rakav wouldn't apply. So the point is that Rabbi is saying that Reb Shimon takes the view. Then everybody agrees to those views. So therefore, there's no question that if the mess is buried together with tachrichim or in a wooden coffin or whatever, there's no question there's no rock. Everybody agrees to that. So now Reb Shimon takes that and extends it. He says, by the same logic, therefore, if you have, if originally you did have a maloy talbot rakav, so you had a mess that fit all the criteria, and now they have rakav, but now a little dust got mixed into that rakav, also Reb Shimon would say it's not the time. So the dust, just like any other dust mixed into it to begin with would be gangiloin, it would prevent it from becoming tamei. The same thing now when it gets mixed in afterwards. So therefore, if we understand Reb Shimon in that way, then what his opinion over there has nothing to do with his opinion as far as the dissolved base, because his opinion is something specific to rakav. Because only by rakav do you have this concept that nothing else can be mixed in to begin with. Okay. Gufa. Now let's get back to discussing that point. We said Maloy Tavod Rokov Shanafal Osecha Ocha Kolshu. We said that if a Maloy Tavod of Rokov, of this dust, if a little bit of regular dust falls into it, Tame, it's still Matame according to the Chachamim, but Rav Shimon Matahar, but Rav Shimon says it's Tahar for the reasons that we just said, because now you have the dust becomes Gandila and it prevents it from being Matame anymore. Another din, Maloy Tavod Rokov Shanispazer Babayas, another din, suppose you have Maloy Tavod Rokov that was scattered in a house. So in other words, like this, you had to begin with, it was all together. Now it got scattered all over the floor of a house. One second. Also, Habayis Tomei, Rav Shimon Matahar. Again, the Chachamim will say that's still Tomei, and the Rav Shimon, again, will say, because it's mixed in with the dirt of the floor, because, you know, they had dirt floors in those days, and therefore it would be Tomei. So now, why do we need both Machlokes?
They don't go by the... I mean, your eyes, so it should be Bafo, shouldn't it?
Because the Chachamim say, sure, there's a concept of bittul, but bittul can apply, for example, isurim can be bottle. Where do you find that? Like that truma should be bottle, especially if you're going to say that one grain of it might be between two other grains. Mela, if you have a roiv of something else, fine, but here there's not necessarily even a roiv. Yeah. So the question is, why we need the machloikis in both cases? When the Chacham said the house is Tomei, by the way, what we mean is it's Tomei ba'oihel. Now, when it comes to, now we know that most things are a mess, are matama b'maga b'masto v'oihel. There's a few exceptions. One of them is this rokov. It's not matama b'maga because it's impossible to touch all of it at one time. It's little particles, after all. They're not all connected together. So it's impossible to touch all of it at once. Therefore, it's not matama b'maga, but it is matama b'masa, because let's say you put all of it into a box and carried it, then you could become tamei. It can also be matama b'oihel, because as long as it's in a house, as long as you have a roof over it, yeah, well, so as long as you have a tefach, as long as you have an oil over it. Yeah. So the same thing, even though it's spread out throughout the whole house, nevertheless, the whole house is still an oil over it. One beam in a house is mile over one part, and a different one is mile over the other part. The chumzei doesn't matter. It'll still all combine together. Okay, Rav Shimon says it's covered. So that's the point. The Gemara says it's strict. We need both machlokes. If we only have the first case where the rokov is all in one place and then a little dust falls into it, you would say, Bahi kamir Rabbanon. You know why the Rabbanon say that the rokov is still matamim mishum de machnit, because it's all collected together. Avon is spazer, but if it's scattered all over the house, maybe they would agree with Rav Shimon, because after all, you could say that maybe, fine, you have this part of the roof is an oil over this part is an oil over this part. It's not like you have one particular part of the roof that you could point to and say this is an oil over the whole thing. So maybe they would agree the house is not so. Maybe in mahel, the chozer of mahel, but you can't say that one part is an oil over one part and the other part is an oil over the other part, and therefore each one is only over a chasishir. But if we need the second machlokes, the iashmin and baha. But if we only have the second machlokes, we're scattered in the house. You would say baha omer Reb Shimon de'en ma'al v'chozer ma'al. Then maybe we would think Reb Shimon would say that only then is the house tar, because you don't say that one. You don't say that as long as you don't have one part of the house as an oil over the whole thing, then the house can't be tar. Right? And it's not a matter of bittul. It's not a matter of bittul or gandilo or whatever. It's just practically speaking, you don't have any one part of the roof that's an oil over the whole shear of it. Aval baha, but when it comes to the case where it's all together in one place and a little bit of dust falls into it, aim a modal or the rabbanon, maybe you would agree with the rabbanon that it's still with matam. It's tricha, and that's why we need both machlokes. Okay. Kanya ibra. Then we learn another braisa on this topic. It's actually not a braisa, it's actually a mishnah. The marshal points out that it's actually a mishnah in all ways. The Mishnah says, Maloy Tarvad va'oid afar be takvaris. If you have a little bit more than a Maloy Tarvad of dust from a Beis HaKvaris, from a cemetery. So what do we mean? So Rashi explains, here we're not talking about the classic case of Rokov that we were talking about before, where the body was buried without clothes and in a marble coffin, et cetera, et cetera. Here we're talking about that it was buried in the normal way. However, you have a more than a Maloy Tarvad of the dust from that area, where you have, so now you have there's some decayed remnants of the body in there, and there's also some regular dust, but the total amount is more than a tarvad.
How much
is a tarvad? A tarvad, we just said, is a double handful. So let's say you have more than that. Let's say you have a triple handful.
And how many ounces?
I don't know. Some of it comes from the decayed body. Some of it likely comes from the decayed body, and some of it comes from the earth, and some of it comes from the tachrichim, et cetera, et cetera. So, tell me. such a collection of dust that Tomei, Rav Shimon Matahar, Rav Shimon says it's Tahar. So, my time I did a bonon. So why do the Chachamim say that it is did it Tomei? Because they say Lafisha e Epsha Lamloy Tavid Ba'oida, Fabes Akvaris, Shain by Mloy Tavid Rakal. Because they say inevitably, if you have this more than a tavid of this dust, then of necessity, you're going to have somewhere in there, you're going to have a full tarvad of actual decayed remnant from the body itself, and therefore it's going to be metaphor. Tosfos disagrees with that explanation. Tosfos brings from the Rashbam, who disagrees with that explanation, because after all, we said before, everybody agrees. If the mess is buried with clothing and whatever, then there's no rakav. So why all of a sudden are the Chachamim taking a different tack over here and saying that we do consider the rakav that came from the mess? So rather, the Rashbam explains, we are actually talking about the case where we said before where it could become rakav, so it was buried without clothes and in a marble coffin, etc. But it was very common in those days that what they used to do is they would bury people in niches in the ground. We learned about this in Baba Basra, for example. They would dig out horizontal niches in the ground and put the mason cave-like and dig and then put the mason in there. Then what they would do is they would plaster them. They would coat them with plaster. So then what happens is that so now what happens is the body starts decaying over there inside the coffin, and eventually you have Maloy Tavad Rakov. Now you have some of the plaster fell off and got mixed into that. So now, again, and the Chachamim said before, it doesn't matter. As long as you had Maloy Tavad Rakov to begin with, we don't care what got mixed in after that. So therefore, the Chachamim said that now you have, inevitably, there is a Maloy Tavad Rakov in there. Either there's a little bit of dust from the plaster in there. Doesn't matter. Well, you already had a Maloy Tavad Rakov, therefore it's metaphor.
There's no taruba.
They don't care. They're about the fact that it's But Rav Shimon Matahar, and Rav Shimon says it's taruba. Yeah, so my time out of the bottom, Lafisha Yepshal Maloy Tavid Ba'oid, Afabet Akvaris, Shain by Maloy Tavid Rakov, again, because they say if you have a Maloy Tavid Ba'oid of this dust, then inevitably there has to be a Maloy Tavid Rakov from the actual body itself. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so that's that. Now we're done with the matter of Rakov, and now we're going to return to the topic of the Shulya. So they don't hold that there's this concept of being Mavakala. If it was bottled, the roy would be one thing, but otherwise not. Fine. Getting back now to the Shulya. The Gemara says, how did we get into this whole discussion of Rakov? Again, because we were trying to say that Rav Shimon's reason about the Shulya with the dissolved baby, why he's Matahirit, is because the dissolved baby is whatever constituted the actual substance of the baby is mixed up with various other things, and therefore it's bottled. And we said that's the same as he holds by Rakov. But now we're saying that, no, Rakov is a separate situation because he holds Sofei Ketchilas, right? So now the end of the Rakov has to be like the beginning. Just like to begin with, the Rakov can only be formed if it's pure. The same way at the end, it has to be pure. Okay, so Hashta de Amit, time of the Rav Shimon, Mishim Sofei Ketchilas. Well, then if you're saying that Rav Shimon's reason is based on Sofei Ketchilas when it comes to Rakov, well, then Gabi Shulya, my timer. Then we have to go back to the question, why by Shulya? There was a complete baby there at one point. It was in miniature, fine, because it was a very early stage embryo, but there still was a complete goof there at one point. Even if it was less than a kazayit, it's still a mess sholem. We said before that it means that just like when Rakov is first formed, it has to be pure. Rav Shimon would say, in order for it to be metami later on, it also has to remain pure. If anything else is mixed in, then not. So that's not relevant as far as a shulya, as far as a shulya with a dissolved baby, because one has nothing to do with the other. There's no concept that for a baby to be metami, it has to be pure. The whole concept that it has to be pure. So if you can kill us, it only applies to Rakov. There's a special case. There's Rakov that when the Rakov... That's the point. When it decomposes, it has to be purely from the mess without any tachrisim or wood or whatever. Why not before? Because when the rakov is forming, it has to be pure rakov from the mess. That's what we're saying. So then the question is, Gabi Shulya, my timer. So why does Rav Shimon say, in the case of the Shulya, why would he say that the house is not Tomei? After all, you had a baby over there. There was other blood and liquids and whatever mixed in with it. So what? The answer is, Amar Rav Yechanan, Mishum Bitzel Beroiv Nahubah. So Rav Yechanan says, the reason is, because before we were assuming that as long as it's mixed with any amount, then it would be bottled. Because that's what we said before, as far as the rakov. You have a Maloy Tavid rakov, and you have one little bit of dust falls into it, and Rav Shimon says that's enough to be bottled. But here what we're talking about, the reason is based on Bittul Beroiv. before we were assuming that maybe the blood and whatever that accompanies the baby is less in volume than the volume of the baby itself. Now we're saying that, no, it's greater in volume, and therefore, yes, batel b'roi.
I believe in mashu in one case and merov in another.
Because in the case of rokov, it's a special case, because he says, sofek hitzilase, just like to begin with.
No, he says that. Also.
Okay, because that whole concept that rokov has to be formed pure is unique to rokov. That concept does not apply to any other source of trauma.
On the basis of what?
On the basis of Allah Kalam Shemisinim, and that's how Rokov works.
According to everybody.
And we said before that everybody agrees that Chilase has to be in the Machlok. This is about Sosa. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan says, in this case, though, you have the blood and whatever else is greater in volume than the baby. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon would say it's Mavapala. So it's Bittul B'Roi. So Rabbi Yochanan is going according to his own shita in explaining this way. Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are saying the same thing. They're saying dinim that both depend on the same principle of bittul b'roi. Rabbi Shimon ha'damaran. Rabbi Shimon, we just said that he says therefore that the dissolved baby is bottled in the larger amount of blood that came out together with it. Rabbi Eliezer, where do we see Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying such a thing? D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, or D'tanan, actually, it's a Mishnah. We learned this in Bechoros. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, a behema gasta sheshofa chararas dam, a behema gasta, a large animal, cattle, which never gave, a cow, never gave birth before, so now it's going to be giving birth, and that if it's a male, then it's going to be a Bechor. Now instead it shed a large clump of blood. I raise it to cover. The din is that clump has to be buried because apparently it's a baby, it's a bechor that got dissolved and now it's dissolved and mixed in with the blood and therefore it's not recognizable, but it still considered a bechor, therefore it's asabana. Oktura mina bechora, and the mother is now potter from bechora. The next baby that it has will not be a bechor. V'toni Rav Chiya Allah, so Rav Chiya taught a braisa on that. So this is what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, that you have to bury it, But Tony Rabbi Chiya Allah, so Rabbi Chiya teaches a braise in that connection, Eina matama loy b'maga v'loy b'masa. This clump of blood is not going to be considered a nevela. It's not going to be matama, a person who touches it or carries it. Unlike if it was had it been a regular baby, not a clump of blood, and it was born dead, let's say, or died afterwards, it would be a nevela. A person touches it or carries it, it becomes tummy. Like this, Rabbi Chiya is saying it's not. So the question is, if it's not metame at all, so in other words, we don't consider that there might have been a baby in there, that there might be a baby in there, in this clump. So if that's the case, so if there's no baby in there, then I to cover. Then we have to first of all ask, why would you have to bury it then? If it has no kedusha, if we don't assume there's a baby in there, then it has no kedusha as bechora. So why should we have to bury it? And the reason is, Rabbi says, the only reason we have to do that is in order to publicize that this mother animal is now potter from bechora. Everybody like this, you bury it, so that makes a big to do. So therefore, people realize now when the next normal baby is born, they realize this isn't the bechora. And when they see the owner keeping it for himself and not giving it to the kohen, they're not going to be choshed to him that he's doing the wrong thing.
When you're burying a son that comes out of animal, it's a big to do.
Apparently, it's a big enough thing. Yeah, you have to dig a hole in the ground, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
One second.
So the point is Alma Vlad Malyahu. So we see that we are considering it to be a real baby because, after all, we're saying the mother is potter from Bechor. We're saying the next baby will not be considered a Bechor. So obviously we are considering it a real baby. Well, in that case, then we have to ask, so why are we saying then that's not Matame as a Nevela? Manafshech, in other words, if it's a baby, then okay, the mother is potter from Bechor, but then it should be Matame. And if it's not a baby, then fine. The only reason we're burying it is to be mefarsim, but then it's not metame. But if it's not a baby, then why is she potter from bechorah? She didn't yet have a baby.
Like a fungal.
Well, it's not even, because there's no reason. Rav Chiya is saying that's not metame, meaning it was not even considered.
Fungal will be metame.
Fungal will be metame, I guess. The answer is Amar Rav Yechanan Mishum Bittul B'Roi. So here's where Rav Yechanan says that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is saying the same thing, that it's based on Bittul B'Roi. Yes, there was a baby over there. We can assume that there was a baby over there. However, it's Batul Barayis. So therefore, in terms of that, Tumas Nevela, we don't. It doesn't have Tumas Nevela because Batul and the larger amount of blood that came out with it that all caked together. However, therefore, it's not Matama Tumas Nevela. In terms of Bechora, therefore, in terms of having Kedushas Bechora, therefore, it also doesn't have to the extent that you should have to bury it. The only reason you bury it is Kedela Farsima. But in terms of that, there was an actual baby there, which was Peter Refem, and therefore that the next baby is not. There was. So we see Rabbi Yechanan is saying that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says his din on the basis of that it can be batul b'roiv. So he's saying Rabbi Shimon says the same thing as far as the dissolved baby. Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, umoyde Rabbi Shimon she'imer tmeya leida. Now, however, so that says that it's based on the Sadiq. The Rakov is a special case, right? But other than that, Rabbi Shimon. Right. Okay. Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, umoyde Rabbi Shimon she'imer tmeya leida. Now, with all of this, though, we said in the Mishnah, and we've been explaining all this time, that Rabbi Shimon is saying that it's not considered that there's a baby over here, and therefore the house is not Tomei, therefore the house where the birth took place is not Tomei, because, again, as we said, it's batul b'roiv, it's batul in a larger amount of blood and whatever that came out with it. However, Rabbi Ami tells us that Rabbi Shimon would agree she'imei tmeya leida, that the mother is still Tomei from a birth. Now, it'll be a suffix, because we don't know whether it was a boy or a girl baby, because of the dissolved. So we'll have to have 14 days of Tumah and 26 days of Yimei Tmeya, fine. But she will be Tomei from giving birth. Now, why? On the face of it, if Rabbi Shimon says there's no baby, then what? The answer is, Amalei Ahu Sovel Rabbi Ami. So a certain old person said to Rabbi Ami, there's some places where Tosfos discusses that might be Eliyahu HaNavi, as but a lot of time with Rabbi Yechanan, and I will explain to you Rabbi Yechanan's reason. The reason is, the Amar Pro Ishek, he says, Ria V'yolda Zach of Agayma. The Pazik starts off, Pasha says, Ria. If a woman... When a woman emits seed, meaning in other words becomes pregnant, the yolda zachar, and she gives birth to a male. So the Torah tells us she's tamei for X number of days and tahor for X number of days. Meaning, why the expression kisazria meloshen zera means afilu lo yolda ela kein sheizria, even if she only ended up giving birth to something that was like the original zera, meaning the original zera was liquid. The original zera was over there. The original zera that starts creating the baby is liquid. So even if she only gives birth to something that's liquid, nevertheless, tmeya leida. Nevertheless, the pasuk is telling us that she's tamei for X number of days for leida. So therefore, so that's where Rav Shimon is getting this from. Okay.
But the leida is not liquid.
No, normally a leida is a solid baby, but in this case, even because the pasuk says kisha kisazria, then we learn from that that even if the yolda was only kisazria, was only something like zera, a liquid, nevertheless she's still tmeya leida. Fine. According to the Chachamim, she's definitely tmeya leida because they ain't sure you're below Vlad. The house is even tmeya. Yeah, for a different reason, right? Okay.
They say because what?
Because ain't sure you believe Vlad, they don't hold this whole concept that the blood of the baby is bottle and the larger amount of blood, and therefore, yeah. Okay. Fine. Rish Lakish Omar. Okay, so now let's talk further about this matter of a body that's not recognizable as a body anymore. Rish Lakish Omar. Shfir shetrafuhu b'meimam. If you have a sphere, again, that we talked about the other day, you have the skin, the membranes or whatever of the baby, that the where the actual bones and muscles or whatever are supposed to be developing inside it, and like this, it was born premature. So tarfuhu, if they mixed it, b'meimam, with the water. And Rashi has two explanations. Either it means the water that they washed it with. We talked the other day. We said that when you're checking a sphere, you shouldn't wash it with water because that can dissolve. Instead, you should use oil. But let's say they use water. The other possibility, Rashi says, it means is the water that came out together with the birth. So you mixed up the baby together with that. Then Rav Shlokha says, "Nas kemeshin is babul atzerosay." Then it has the din that you would have with a mess where the form of it is not even recognizable anymore. For example, Rashi says, "Let's say if a body were to be burnt and then the ashes are scattered." So this answers what you were asking before about ashes of a mess. So let's say if a body were to be burnt and the ashes are scattered and it's not recognizable as a body anymore. Then it's not Matame anymore. So Rosh Lakish says, by the same logic, if you took the sphere and dissolved it and mixed it up with the water or whatever, so it's not Matame anymore.
Because
it's not recognizable anymore. Right? Amalei Rabbi Yechanan Rosh Lakish, mes chenis babul tzerosim and olam b'tahor. Where were you getting this idea that a mess that's mixed up, that's not recognizable as a mess anymore, where were you getting that it's tahor? Ilema Mahada Amar Rav Shamsai Amar Rav Yitzchak Magdala. Are you maybe going to say that you get it from what Rav Shamsai says in the name of Rav Yitzchak Magdala? Some say it's the other way around. Rav Yitzchak Magdala says it in the name of Rav Shamsai. Apparently they were chaverim, so I guess each one could say it in the name of the other one, whatever. Mes shenisraf. If a mess is burnt, the shildoi kayemes, but the shildoi is still intact. So Rashi explains shildoi means the actual form of it. In other words, that you can say all the ashes are still where they were originally and it's still recognizable as a mess even though it's all completely turned to ashes. The ashes haven't been scattered. Various other Rishonim talk about other possibilities of what it means for shildoi kayem. Means it was only partially burnt. It means the skeleton is still intact, whatever. Tame, so then it's still matame. And because not necessarily because something was, according to Rashi, everything was burnt, but the ashes haven't been scattered. They're still in the same places where they were, so you still have, you have a pile of ashes in the exact shape of a human being. According to other Rishonim, it could mean, yeah, that's what we're saying. Shildoi, I mean, it would mean the shape, yeah. Again, you have other Rishonim, we'll talk about other possibilities, that shildoi can mean the skeleton, or it can mean that it wasn't completely burnt, that the bait, that the, whatever. Anyway, so tome, so it's still metame. In fact, one time it happened that on the basis of that, now we have like this, when a mess is in a house, the din is all of the doorways in and out, all the doorways of that house are considered tome, because eventually you're going to take the mess out of the house. One second. No, the mess, it doesn't move. People move.
It's moved out.
Right. Because that's the point. Because in other words, you're going to be taking out the mess to one of the doorways. And at that point, so therefore, what we say is all the doorways are tummy. But if you have a doorway that's less than 4 tfachim wide, then it's not. Because you know, you're not going to carry it through such a narrow doorway. No, if you have, if the doorway is narrower than 4 tfachim, you're not going to take out the mess through there. So therefore, right. So Maisaho, yeah, it happened once, but there was a case like that, a body that was burnt inside a house, but the it was still recognizable as a body. One second. But Timur like Tsachim Gdolim, the Chachamim said on that basis, all of the larger openings in the house are Tomei. And what we mean by Tomei, in other words, is, so if you have a lintel over the door and somebody stands under the lintel, even though the door is closed and they're outside the house, they're still going to become Tomei as if they were inside it. But they said that the Chachamim said the smaller doorways of the house, the ones that are less than 4 tefachim wide, are tahor. So that's the point. In other words, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, so you're assuming on the basis of that, the kadaitis mina, so you Rish Lakish are assuming from the way that din is told, time of the shildei kayemes, that you're saying, why are the doorways tamei? Is because the body is still recognizable. And you're assuming that if the ashes have been scattered and the body wasn't recognizable, then you would assume it's tahor. Adrabah, says Rabbi Yechanan, on the contrary, maybe that's not the correct diuk from that. Duk min ala haigisa. Maybe learn the other way around. Maybe learn that the diuk is the other way around. Shilda kayemes hu detira lechtach and kanim. Only because the body is still recognizable, that's why they said that the usual rules of doorways apply, and the doorways that are less than 4 tfachim are not tummy. But maybe if it weren't like that, if the ashes had been scattered, then maybe you would say even the narrower doorways are tummy. Because after all, they could conceivably take out one limb at a time to be smaller doorways as well. The whole reason why the larger doorways usually are tummy and the smaller ones are not is because you're not going to cut up the body into pieces and take it out to be smaller doorways or windows or whatever. But ashes you could. So maybe it's the opposite. Maybe that's the point, says Rav Yochanan. Maybe the implication is that the ashes are tomei whether they're scattered or not, but if they're not scattered and the body is still recognizably reasonably intact, then only the psachim golem are tomei, the psachim kanim are not, but if it's scattered, then even the psachim kanim are tomei. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying to Rish Lakish, you can't necessarily infer from that if the ashes are scattered up, or in this case, the case you're talking about of Shpir Shetrafur B'mayim, that it shouldn't be Matame, says Rabbi Yochanan, not necessarily. Okay, so we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Baruch Hashem.